Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Hello and welcome to another SAFC Unfiltered. My name is Frankie Francis, normally joined by Danny Collins, but he's away on international duty once again. I find myself at the Academy of Light, where I will be sitting down with the women's team manager, Mel Ray. They've had a fantastic start to the season, and until the weekend were undefeated in the league. They're currently only second in the division, the Women's Championship, on goal difference, and they have a huge game against that team who are currently top, Charlton Athletic Women, at the weekend. We'll speak about the season so far. We'll speak about those players they recruited in the summer and find out everything we need to know about the women's team so far this season. Welcome back to SAFC Unfiltered. Mel Ray, the women's team manager. Mel, it's been an incredible start to the season. We do speak to you on the back of your first defeat, though, which is unfortunate timing. But we seem to have quite a lot of possession, and they had one opportunity. It was a half chance, and they seemed to score from it.
Yeah, it was a really frustrating afternoon. You know, we knew Blackburn was struggling for results, and, you know, it was one of them banana skins that we've been hoping to avoid. Yeah, you're right, we dominated the ball, we had a lot of possession, but ultimately we didn't have a shot on target, which isn't enough to win a game of football. So on reflection, over the last couple of days, we've been through it and we were disappointed. Bad day at the office, but, you know, we move on and we have to go on another run of good form now to get some more points.
Is it hard to break down a team when they pretty much come up to put everyone behind the ball? Do your attackers get frustrated? Is it up to you and your coaching staff to try and unlock that as much as them?
I think it was a bit of a new thing for us to experience.
It's because you're so good this season.
Yeah, and ultimately that's what teams now might do. And, you know, we have to prepare the team better to kind of come unstuck against them, you know, formations, you know, sitting in with a back five, and especially when they went 1-0 up, you know, I didn't think it was possible, but they went even deeper and literally kind of sat on the edge of the box. And, you know, there's different ways to try and beat it. And, you know, we've got to be better on the ball. We've got to take more risks. You've got to try and create little overloads on the pitch. You've got to have ball carriers. And sometimes you've got to just do something off the cuff to try and unlock a bit of space and get a shot away. And, you know, next time hopefully we'll be more prepared and better for it. It's an experience that we've got to learn from and move on.
Yeah, and I'm sure your squad are learning all the time. They have got off to a brilliant start this season, though, already eclipsing the points total from last season. 6 wins so far, undefeated until the weekend as well in the league. What do you put that down to then? You had quite a productive recruitment during the summer, didn't you? And we can probably get into that in a little bit more detail, but that definitely has helped, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think obviously moving to a hybrid model, first and foremost, being able to offer full-time football has allowed us to attract players from outside the Northeast.
So just for the people listening who don't or are not aware of the hybrid model, just explain that in a little bit more detail, and it allows you to employ more staff and footballers, really.
Not so much more staff, just offer full-time contracts. Okay. So we've got a mixture of players who are part-time still, mm-hmm. and we've got a mixture of players who are full-time professional footballers. So, you know, the next step is to be fully professional, mm-hmm. and have players in and around us all the time. But that hybrid model allows that little bit of flexibility for people who've still got careers outside the game, who still want to play for the football club as well.
Yeah, and the hybrid model, I guess, will have helped as well. Looking at the league itself, you were in the minority probably last season and this season. Still, as that is working, the hybrid model, because so many teams are full-time now, and it's obviously in the league above as well. That's got to be something that the club's aiming towards, and by introducing this at this stage, it's a good intention, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a good step forward. In terms of, you know, where we are in the league, we're above full-time footballing teams as well. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, you've seen the quality that these new players have brought to the team, and I think, you know, going fully full-time possibly in the near future is only going to kind of give the team a better chance as well.
Yeah, so let's go back then to the summer. You told about this hybrid way of working, a little bit in advance of that. So who is it who sits down then? You know, when it comes to the men's first team, there's a whole department who sit down and working in advance of transfer windows and stuff like that. Is it you and Steph just looking for players or using your experience of the leagues and your contact books to say, you know, this could be a good player for us, that could be a good player? Is it just the small team of you?
Yeah, it's really small. You know, myself and Steph have been in the women's game a long time now, and we know a lot of people, we know a lot of players, especially at this level in the Championship, and, you know, a lot of players obviously in the Super League. But more importantly, we know coaches who can recommend players as well. If, you know, we do research on all the players that we brought in. We spoke to all the previous coaches over the years that they've been playing, and it basically got a reference really to make sure that was the type of person we wanted to bring to the football club. We collate a huge database over the course of the season. We'll just jot names down, bit of a wish list really, and kind of add detail to that wish list as we go in terms of how that player's maybe doing throughout the season. And the hardest thing to know is maybe what type of contract they're on currently at a club, because they're the bit of information that you don't really find out. So then you've got to go and try and find out who their agent is and then speak to their agents. And it's a very long process, but, you know, we were absolutely delighted with kind of the players that we were able to attract to the football club in the summer. We had lots of good conversations with them. We managed to get majority of them up to the academy, and I think once you showcase the facility and the environment, I think that's it's a massive positive to attract players to this football club.
And with the better standard of personnel through the door, does that make your life easier as a coach to try and implement your philosophy as a coach and as coaching staff? It's obviously starting to pay off now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's like anything,
the better tools you have,
yeah. You know, the better outcome. You know, with having access to players more, you're able to have more contact time with them. They're fitter. Mm-hmm. They have more recovery. You can spend more time and kind of get your ideas over. You can watch individual clips. You can get them in groups. And, you know, you can do so much more rather than, you know, like last year when they were coming in from work, they were on the training pitch, finished training, out the door, and that's them gone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the small amount of time we had with them wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. It wasn't enough to compete at that level. And, you know, we did enough with them to stay in the league. And, you know, we always knew this next step was coming, and that was the main objective last season, was to stay in the league. And ultimately we did.
Yeah.
And, you know, the recruitment has obviously been good in the summer, and, you know, these players have obviously made a huge difference.
So what is your football philosophy then, Mel, now that you are able to implement it, or certainly a better standard of football? What do you want to see from a Sunderland Football Club side of your own going forward?
Yeah, I think like the football club has its own philosophy as well, and you have to have a bit of both, because obviously ultimately you have to have the players in order to, you know, coach them the way you want to play. I think we're starting to get an identity. We've got some real good patterns in terms of our attacking principles. We want to be a possession-based team. Mm. We don't want Claudia or Megan just shelling it forward. We want to create some patterns. We want to try and carry the ball forward so we have better opportunities in the final third. We want to score lots of goals. Yeah. But there's obviously different ways to do that, and depending on how the opposition set up, again, you've got to be able to flex and adapt in order to get the desired outcome. Defensively, we have a set way in terms of how we press when we haven't got the ball in certain areas of the pitch. And I'm not going to tell you all my secrets, because you never know who's
the Charlton manager might be listening.
Yeah, Karen Hills might be listening. I know her really well, so she probably is listening. So Hillsy, switch off. But, you know, having that clear identity, and that's starting to come through when we watch the clips back and watch the games back, you know, in-house, internally, the coaching staff and the players can see it. And I think that's really important, that they're buying into the way we want to play.
That's interesting as well. You said about the club's philosophy and how they want to impose themselves on the football industry, I guess. And there's a bit of crossover there. And we're up here now at the Academy of Light recording this podcast. Do you feel a lot more included in the club these days, Mel?
Yeah, I think it's kind of gone full circle under, you know, for the amount of years that I've been here. But, you know, we feel really... It feels really inclusive. we're in a really good place at this moment in time, and we can see that there's a plan in place from the hierarchy, and you know, we just need to keep doing our jobs really well in getting results in order to be in good positions to for their next steps to happen.
Yeah, so you train up the Academy of Light with the girls. What's the usual week looking like because of the hybrid model? Those who are firefighters, they still go and do their duties, and nurses and teachers, and then are they separate to the people who may be in full, more of a full-time role? How does it work?
So everyone's off on a Monday.
Okay.
So we play on a Sunday and we're off immediately. Yep. On the Monday. The Tuesday, the majority of the team are in. It's the part-time players who aren't in or who can't make it in. So example, Meg Beer's not at work today. It's a Tuesday today, so Meg Beer's in. Mm-hmm. So when she's available, she can come in. And
yeah,
the other players that are missing are Grace McCarty and Louise, but everyone else is in the building. Mm-hmm. And then we're back in on a Wednesday. The whole squad's in on a Wednesday. And then the whole squad's in on a Thursday. We're off on a Friday, whole squad's in on a Saturday, and then we play again on a Sunday.
So how soon do you start looking at the opposition then? Is it on the Tuesday, I guess? Then you start looking at set players, that kind of thing, how you're going to approach the game?
We kind of work maybe like 2 weeks in advance, so we've already got bits, you know, we're already kind of looking a little bit, like especially the analyst Gino, who's come in, he's already kind of looked at, he's like a game ahead all of a sudden.
And he's giving you information about the upcoming opposition, and then you get the games to watch, I imagine.
Yeah, so they get uploaded onto a system. He'll do all the code, all the things that we want to see, and they're there for the players to watch. So mm-hmm. you don't need to sit and watch a 90-minute game. You could just click on a certain code and watch Charlton playing out from the back.
Yeah.
And you can see every time they've played out from the back. So if I'm Liz Adupi, I can see how maybe I'm going to be used to press. So all the players have that information at their fingertips. You can access it on a smartphone. So in terms of advanced technology, that's really good. Mm-hmm. And then come the week of the game, so on a Tuesday morning, all my coaching team will sit down and we'll review the game on the Sunday, but then we'll quickly flip it to the game that we're preparing for during the week.
Would it be fair to say that the recruitment in the summer got a good blend of young, exciting talent and some experience in there, and that's what's also added to the success this season? I know you've got a couple of injuries at the moment, but the spine of the side has got some good experience, but also some exciting players in and around it as well.
Yeah, I think you first and foremost, you have to identify where you want to strengthen. And we don't just go after one player. I mean, Steph had numerous conversations. There was lots of contracts turned down.
How high are you shooting in these conversations? Are you looking in the WSL?
I think players have played in the WSL and maybe come down with teams. Mm-hmm. I think players who are currently capable of playing in the WSL are probably reluctant to step down in the Championship if they've got WSL offers. But, you know, we spoke to some... We always speak to players who we think can add value. We never want to be desperate and just go after someone just for the sake of it, because we were panicking. We were cool and calm and stuck to our processes and used that kind of recruitment document to look at players and maybe like you categorise them like A, B, C. If we go for A, if we don't get A, this is the second option, third option. So it was a busy summer, but you know, we were absolutely delighted with the blend of players that we were able to bring in, and I think they've certainly raised the bar for the players that we retained, and you know, that's only a good thing.
Yeah, a couple of exciting players to pull out maybe. Jenna Deer, Mary McAteer. What have they brought to the squad as individuals?
Yeah, they've got loads of good qualities. Again, Mary came through Aston Villa. I know Chrissy at Aston Villa really well. So again, we had conversations there, and we played against her at Coventry. She went out on loan, and you know, a really young player. I think people forget how young she actually is. She's just a year older than Grace Eden, Katie Watson, but everyone seems to think she's got lots of experience. You know, she has in such a short time, but she's still such a young player who's still learning her craft and in her trade, and someone who we have to look after. But yeah, she's had real impact in the 9-10 games that she's played. She's, you know, her ambitions are she wants to score and she wants to assist, and she's certainly done that in some big games for her.
If there's any areas of the game you could improve on at the moment, what is it do you think that the squad are lacking of anything?
I think maybe just a little bit more depth. I think, you know, like every manager, I would maybe want more. Maybe one or two more in. I've identified some targets for January, and you know, it's kind of a late Christmas list, so I'm hoping that Santa's kind this year.
Santa Carol. let's speak about the home games and the games up at Eppleton. Now, a lot's made of this between supporters about where actually Eppleton is for a start, and I guess it helps when you have a big crowd there, and you know, the girls will feel the benefit, won't they, of having good home support. You know, in a dream scenario, if a stadium was built in the city centre, would that help attendances, do you think? Or is it just a circumstance of the division, where you're at as a football club at the moment, do you think?
I think if we were bang smack in the city centre, I think you would probably sell out the ground every week, because the footfall in the city centre, you would get random walk-ins, and it's obviously a lot more accessible with the metros. And you know, I understand Eppleton's kind of out there, and it's not easy to get to. And you know,
there's a bus strike at the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's been the case for the last couple of weeks. And you know, it doesn't help. There's obviously no park and ride to help, you know, facilitate fans getting there. And I think you've seen that I think we had nearly 700, 800 for the last couple of home games before the last two we've played, and I think it was like 400. So there's 300 fans missing somewhere, and you know, that, you know, I would love to for the team to play in front of 1500 fans every week at Eppleton, but you know, we've got to kind of get to that standard first before we think about moving to, I don't know, people keep asking us, would you not rather play at the Stadium of Light? And
yeah, well, it's a double-edged sword, that, I bet, because imagine that's, you know, you put 1,000 people in the Stadium of Light. That can be a little bit of a weird atmosphere, if anything.
Yeah, it is really weird, and it doesn't...
You've done it before, haven't you?
Yeah, and it doesn't feel great. Mm. There's a real disconnect from the fans to the players, because you can't hear or feel them. You know, when there's 1,000 round the outside of Eppleton, they're almost on top of you, and you can hear them, and they kind of, like, give you that extra gear almost. And, you know, in the stadium, although the surface is obviously a lot better and, you know, the pitch is a lot flatter, but, you know, you've got to kind of get your trade-off right.
Let's look at the league as a whole this season. Obviously, you're doing a lot better. You've got a better squad, it's fair to say, this season as well, playing better football. But what have you made of the league this season? You've played 10 so far. What do you make of the standard this season?
I think it's got better. Mm. I think as a squad, we've improved massively. But I think when you look, if you really hone in on what teams have brought in as well, I think every squad's improved. There's some really good squads out there. There's some really good teams that are competing. And, you know, the Championship's a tough division. It's almost tighter than the WSL almost, because on any given day, anyone can beat anyone. And I think you've seen that on Sunday when Blackburn came and beat us. So, it's tough and it's ruthless. You have to be at it and you have to be able to perform week in, week out to kind of sustain some kind of consistency.
Exciting, though, to be at the top end, and we'll come on to it, but there's going to be a big game coming up against Charlton. What have you made of those this season? You said you know the manager. How have you made that of their start?
They were a good team last year. You know, we managed to get a point down there last year at their smaller home ground that they're playing at. Luckily, we're playing at the Valley on Sunday, which is another good experience. We know the pitch is going to be good. They play a similar formation to us. They're certainly not going to sit in a low block. We're five behind the ball. So
that works in your benefit then?
Yeah, I think both teams will go for it. It'll be a pretty open game. And, you know, ultimately, you've got to be good in both boxes to try and get something out of the game. But it'll be tough. Karen will have them organised, and she'll be well aware of the threat that we pose, because she's been burnt off us a couple of times, so she'll be prepping her team to try and get something from the game.
Will it be travelling down on the day? Is that how it normally works?
No, we always stay over. We stayed over for Birmingham, so anything further than Birmingham is an overnight stop, so we'll train Saturday morning, and then we'll have our lunch here and then get on the bus and travel down.
Good. Okay. I want to ask you about a big football story in the last couple of weeks, and that's Emma Hayes deciding to leave Chelsea and maybe move on to international football. What would you like to put on record about Emma Hayes' contribution to women's football in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, I think she's the longest serving, you know, manager in the women's in the women's setup.
12 years. Yeah.
12 years. Yeah. Maybe not far behind her, am I?
I don't think so. Yeah.
She's obviously a huge figure in the women's game. Built an incredible squad at Chelsea, who have been dominant in the women's game. You know, she speaks really well.
This is probably why she gets a lot of media work as well.
And I know her personally to an extent, and, you know, I've spoken to her numerous times, and, you know, she's a nice person. She's a big advocate on developing female coaches and supporting women in the women's game. It's a real passion of hers, and what a good opportunity. I know it's not official in terms of what she's gone on to.
But everyone's saying it's kind of like a given, isn't it, that she's going to do the USA team, which is like the biggest team in the world, right?
Yeah, it seems like she's obviously ready for a new change and ready for a different type of challenge. And, you know, what a good opportunity that is to go and live in America. I know she's got a small child, which I know exactly what that's like as well, to kind of move your family around. And, it'll be interesting to see how she gets...
Yeah.
Stuck in over there and what kind of impact she can have on the national team, because I think they have dipped over recent tournaments as well. So I'm sure she'll want to try and win a World Cup with the USA.
Yeah. And speaking of our own national side, England as well, going so close in the summer. Yes, it was the summer. I mean, Serena Wiegmann is doing a good job for you as well, do you think?
Yeah, she's, you know, off the back of the Euros, I think everyone was kind of really buying into kind of what she was doing. And, you know, you can't not when you win a major trophy.
Was it a game too far, the final, with all the injuries maybe? And, you know, this suspension as well in the previous rounds as well.
Yeah, I think at that level, when you've got, you know, an unbelievable squad of players to choose from, I think that shows how important strength and depth is, and players taking opportunities when certain players are unavailable for selection or injured. And that's something we're experiencing at the minute with likes of Amy and Jenna being injured. You know, people have to be ready to step in, and ultimately if you perform well and you do well, you get a chance to keep the shirt. And, you know, that's kind of the messages that we kind of have in this football club as well. So, you know, Serena's done an unbelievable job, and I think they've got a big game coming up at Wembley where they need to beat the Netherlands, is it?
Yeah,
in order to qualify for Olympics. So, it'll be interesting. It'll be a good game.
You mentioned Amy Goddard being injured there and Jenna as well, and you had a cup game a week or so ago against Durham, didn't you? And you'd chosen, I think it was about seven teenagers in that squad, where it was, you know, on paper, you obviously put out not a weaker side, but you could tell that there was changes because it was, you know, a cup game to league game. But it was good that how well the girls competed, didn't they? They more than were a match for Durham, weren't they, in the evening?
I think it's, you know, I've said it before, it's the hardest thing in my job to leave people out.
Yeah.
We know, I see them every day training hard, applying themselves, and ultimately, the players who have been given the shirt have been doing really well, and it's hard for me to take the shirt off them.
Yeah.
But then players who are still kind of chomping at the bit to get in have to be ready in case there's an injury, or in case there's moments of the game where they have to go on and be a game changer and go and win the game for it, or they have to go on and maybe make sure we stay in the game and take all 3 points. So there's, you know, their jobs are really important, and they're still very much part of the squad, and I'm always going to utilise that cup competition to give them the opportunity to get on the pitch. And I thought they did really well. You know, the first half in particular, I thought we were really good. And, you know, making the three changes at half time was always going to kind of ruin the momentum of the game a little bit. But to take them three off, who I knew were going to start on Sunday, was the important bit for me to protect them. You know, I could have kept them on. I could have put Lizzie Dupuy on. I could have put Mary McAteer on. But ultimately, the bigger prize was, you know, the game against Blackburn, which obviously ultimately didn't go very well for her, but that was kind of the process behind giving them players the opportunity.
And is that what players get at Sunderland women's team? They get opportunities because we've got a long history of bringing on regional talent and to moving them on to the world scale. Is that what you would pride yourself on, maybe?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in developing young players. And I think, you know, the 20 years that I spent at Gateshead College, that's what I did. That was why I was in the game. And, you know, developing all them, you know, Jill Scott, you know, having a part to play in their kind of journey is something that I'm going to continue to do whilst being in this position at the football club. We've got a PGA Academy, which is an under-21 team who, you know, we recruited them in the summer and we had nearly over 100 players on trial.
And where do you source them players from?
It was just in that an application form. It was out on social media. This is the trials, you know, fill it in if you want to turn up. And we had about 100, I can't remember the exact number, it seems an eternity away, but we had, you know, we had loads of players turn up, and it's hard to then try and identify talent over a 2-week period. Yeah.
What kind of things are you looking for?
You're looking at technical competency.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Characters, I guess.
Yeah, you're looking at how they interact. You're looking at, you know, their personalities. You know, each team, we had about 6 teams on the day, and every team had a coach, and they're trying to put them into a certain formation to see if they understand roles and responsibilities. And, you know, it was a case of me and Steph just stepping back and kind of having a lens on everything. Yeah. And everything got videoed, so we were able to watch it back. And ultimately, then we then chose the players that we thought could come in that squad was Mary Corbin, mm-hmm. Ella West, mm-hmm. you know, and they've done so well over the first 2 months of that program with Courtney and Dom, who are running the 23s as well. And it's about, you know, giving them the opportunity to come in to see how the feel and cope. And the feedback that we've been getting off the coaches in the pathway is that when they go back, they're a different player.
Really?
They're starting to set the standards. They're starting to be have a bit more leadership about them. And and ultimately, that's what you want, because their friends are going, oh, what was it like?
Yeah.
What was it like training with Jenna Deere or Amy Goddard or Lizzie Jupy? And they're going, oh, you know, they're so excited by it that they want to keep doing well, because then they'll get the nod again. And you hope that's infectious. And, you know, we try and spread it around a bit so it's not always the same players. But ultimately, they have to earn the right to step up.
Yep.
And they have to be able to contribute. And, you know, Mary Corbin playing 90 minutes, you know, when she was playing grassroots football last year, was an unbelievable achievement. And mm-hmm. Ella West is a 16-year-old coming on at half-time, playing against a Republic of Ireland senior international is, mm-hmm. you know, a credit to her.
No, it's fantastic. It sounds like you're in a really great space, Mel. I guess, okay, then we'll end by looking ahead to this Charlton game at the weekend. You've already mentioned that you're going to be playing down at the Valley. 12 o'clock kickoff, isn't it, as well? Is there much of an away presence at the moment for Sunderland?
I think we have. We had quite a few at the Lewis game. Mm-hmm. I know Ian Todd's a big advocate in the supporters branches in mm-hmm. terms of getting emails out to the Sunderland supporters down south. But, you know, we have some diehard fans who do make the distance and who do travel the length and breadth of the country. And, you know, it's much appreciated by the players, and the players always make sure they go over at the end and thank the fans for supporting the team. And hopefully we can get a few red and white shirts in the stadium, because you know,
it's a big ground.
It's a big ground, and we'll probably hear them.
Yeah. Looking at it on paper as well, Mel, you both got the same amount of wins, drawn the same amount, lost the same amount. There's only 2 goals difference. That's why they're ahead of you, I think, with goals scored, isn't it? Which separate you in the league. As a coach as well, it must be a bit of a mouth-watering one for you.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And, you know, I think ultimately all eyes are on us. You know, we have to focus on ourselves and make sure we put in a better performance than what we did last week. And we have to be competitive, and we know it's going to be difficult, but, you know, we'll be going there in good confidence, knowing that if we win, we can go back top of the league.
Yes, a good sight it is as well. Thanks, Mel, for joining us on SAFC Unfiltered.